I want to start off by reading to you the words of our closing song. I do this to give you a fighting chance to appreciate the thought. We haven't sung this before. It is in a minor key and in a rather odd rhythm. So if you were trying to follow the notes, it's pretty hard to think about the words at the same time. The piece is called Our Faith is But a Single Gem and was written by John Andrew Story, who was a Congregationalist minister in the early 60s and later became a Unitarian minister. We have 14 of his hymns in our Grace Songbook. Reverend Story uses the metaphor of a rosary, a string of prayer beads, and sees Unitarian Universalism as one bead on the string, with other beads representing major world religions. He wrote, "Our faith is but a single gem upon a rosary of beads. The thread of truth which runs through them supports our varied human needs. Confucian wisdom, Christian care, the Buddhist way of self-control, the Muslim's daily call to prayer are proven pathways to the goal. From many lips in every age, the truth eternal is proclaimed by Western saint and Eastern sage and all the good, however named. Beside the noblest of our race, our lives as yet cannot compare. May we at length their truth embrace and in their sacred mission share." That song is what I used to think universalism meant. I was wrong, but it is still a charming idea. On the other hand, since we are in the business of giving new meaning to older words, maybe I can hang on to my misconception. Anyway, here's where the real sermon starts. Being a curmudgeon, I am slow to embrace change, and the older I get, the worse the condition becomes. I have gradually warmed up to the wonder box. During the last year, it has become as much a part of our liturgy as the chalice lighting and the offering. By the way, I recently discovered where the wonder box idea came from. Maybe this is not news to you, but it was to me. It dates back to a presentation by the Reverend Christina Leon, who is the Faith Development Director at the UU Church of Annapolis. At General Assembly in 2012, Christina asked the magic question for the first time on a national stage. Her exact words, "This special box, this is our wonder box. I wonder what's inside. I need a volunteer who could help me find what's in the wonder box. Anyone." The first person who got to open the wonder box was none other than former UUA president Peter Morales. In the wonder box, Peter found a fork, and Christina then shared a story called The Fairest and the Fork. It was a way to take the fairy tale that we know as The Princess and the Pea and turn it into a social justice parable. It shows you the power of the wonder box. Christina Leon wrote later, I found this on a web page, "The definition of wonder is that it can be a noun or a verb. The noun is this, it's a feeling of surprise mingled with admiration and caused by something beautiful, unexpected, unfamiliar, or inexplicable. It's also a verb, to wonder. And to wonder means to desire or to be curious about knowing something. And I think that these two things describe perfectly what we're trying to impart to people of all ages in our Unitarian Universalist congregations. It's something we cherish." Leon goes on to say, "Even our principles say, our fourth principle says that we honor the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. And our third principle says that we support each other in spiritual growth in our congregations. So we honor even in our principles that not knowing, that wondering, and that growing." So that's why it's called a wonder box. And the reason it's a box, that it's closed, it does many things. It is interactive and surprising. It allows for there to be an interaction. This is not the time where I just stand up here and tell a story. It honors all the generations and tries to speak to them at all levels. So writes Christina Leon. Now, for me, and I expect a few other old-timers, the Wonder Box has long held an ongoing question, and that is the wonder of worship, or more broadly, the wonder of what it is we do during this 11 o'clock gathering. We all know that worship is something out of the ordinary here, for one thing, because we are Unitarian Universalists. Another thing that may come as a surprise to our newer members: our congregation of today has emerged from a 50-year history that did not include a worship service. For the sake of this sermon, I will define old-timers to be any of our members that have been around since we had only one gathering on a Sunday morning. That gathering, note that I do not call it a service, that gathering was the ancestor of our 9:30 program, which still has some of the traditional trappings of the old program. This definition of old-timer makes me an old-timer because I started attending here 21 years ago in 1996. We didn't begin the second gathering, which was originally called a spiritual service or a spiritual celebration, until 3 or 4 years after I started here. At first, that service was led by very intrepid volunteers from our congregation. Later, it was led by an interim minister named Megan Conrad before she accepted a call to a congregation in California. Then in 2006, Reverend Jill Jarvis took the reins of the spiritual service. I do not use the metaphor of taking the reins in a whimsical sense. It had to be an interesting ride for Jill in those early years, if not indeed a crazy-making ride. You should ask her sometime. We held on to the name Spiritual Celebration for several years. When Jill expressed dissatisfaction with that name, we finally changed it to Worship Service around 2012. For Jill, if I recall correctly, the phrase Spiritual Celebration was just too vague and weird, too off the mark. It might have been even off-putting to visitors who were simply looking for a familiar setting, something church-like, but not necessarily hitched to any Bible-centered theology. Worship service. Worship service. Many of the old-timers were puzzled by this term because it sounded like a return to theism. After all, to our old-timer way of thinking, one does not worship unless there is a god or even gods and goddesses to be worshipped. Our leaders in the UUA Education Department were aware of this puzzlement, to be sure. That is why everyone who attends the new-to-UU class here and probably in most other UU congregations learns the following distinction, which I have copied from the UUA website. Quote, "In our congregations, worship is not about bowing down to a deity, but instead considering what is of worth. Worship is our opportunity to contemplate what is most worthy in our lives, to rediscover what we value most deeply, to recognize how to align our true values with our actions, and to find what is sacred to us in our lives, and to consider how we wish to relate to what we find sacred." Let me repeat that last sentence, omitting redundancies. During the worship service, we, one, find what is most worthy or sacred in our lives. Two, consider how we wish to relate to what we find sacred. How did these objectives suddenly become the meaning of worship? The usual answer is that the word worship did actually used to mean something different a long time ago. If we climb into our time machine and cruise back to a time before Shakespeare, in fact, to a time before Chaucer, we find that in the year 900, the ancestor of our word worship had at least the following two meanings. One, the condition of being worthy, dignity, glory, distinction, honor, renown. Two, reverence paid to a supernatural or divine being. The condition of being worthy or reverence paid to a divine being. Now, we know which of those meanings became the predominant and overwhelmingly accepted sense of the word worship in the following centuries. For the rest of the world, yes, but not for us. We UUs have chosen to work with the other meaning, the one that goes condition of being worthy, dignity, glory, distinction, honor, renown. Now, for Christina Leon, who I quoted earlier, the word wonder is doubly valuable because it is both a noun and a verb. And with that, I would wholeheartedly agree. On the other hand, the very same versatility is a problem for the word worship. It is both a noun and a verb. But for the sake of our agnostic brethren and sistren, people like me and Reverend Jill Jarvis, we are insisting that it only be a noun. How many other ship words can you think of in English, words that end in ship? Fellowship,
township,
kinship. I'm getting some good suggestions here. How about scholarship, leadership? How many of those can be a verb? None. We chose the one that has to be both a verb and a noun. And the verb word is the one we would rather not talk about. But I wonder, and the Wonder Box wonders, if the time travel explanation is the real reason we call it a worship service. If you will permit me a bit of curmudgeonly snark, by this logic of time travel cherry picking, we could have chosen lots of traditional terms as the name of our 11 o'clock gathering. Praise service. There's another double noun verb. Epiphany service, awakening service, pilgrimage service, revival service. Unfortunately, Shabbat service is still out of reach unless we decide to move our service to Saturday. But wait, why not call it UU Mass? Does that sound ridiculous? Well, then consider the etymology of Mass. If you funnel the word back to its ancestor in late Latin, Missa, you discover that it means dismissal, to let go or send. Perhaps the concept rose to prominence from the concluding words of the Roman Catholic service, which are, some of you probably have this memorized, ite missa est, meaning go. It is the dismissal. In some Old English texts, the Mass word is translated as sendness, sendness. Is this not what we UUs also aspire to do after our service? To be sent back into the world, renewed, reinvigorated, and filled with sendness. It is at least as convincing a way to repurpose the word Mass as it is to define worship as contemplating what is most worthy in our lives. But we will never call it Mass, will we? We won't, because Mass now means what Catholics do on Sunday, not Buddhists, not Christian Scientists, and especially not Lutherans. Today, Mass is just as Catholic as worship service is Protestant. Catholics are Christian, too. And that brings us back full circle to what I consider to be the fundamental reason we use the word, the phrase, worship service. The term worship service says we're Protestant, and it says so way better than spiritual celebration or wonder service, which is what we really mean. The implication of the phrase worship service is unmistakable. Of course, if we had the space to spell it out with just a little more nuance, our desired connotation would be we are Protestant flavored. When you think about our very short history as a religion, this cannot possibly come as a surprise. Before we were UUs, that is, before 1961, our forebears were separate Unitarian and Universalist congregations. Before Unitarians were officially Unitarians, that is, before 1825, their forebears were Congregationalists, and they, along with the Baptists and the Mennonites and the Presbyterians, were rooted in the Protestant Reformation. Reformers such as Luther and Calvin changed Sunday morning by throwing out most of the sacraments, smells and bells of the Roman Catholic Mass, and replacing them with a service centered on what I'm doing right now, a sermon. Recitation of a creed, congregational singing, prayers, readings from Scripture. A few Sundays ago, Jill referred to this format as the sermon sandwich. But with all the extra trimmings, I would call it the Dagwood sermon sandwich. We know that among the many branches of the Protestant diversification, theologies differed often radically. But the form of Protestant worship remained recognizable, and it is still recognizable in our worship service today. So worship service it is. Worship service it is, despite the fact that our use of the phrase will continue to be misunderstood by everyone outside of our faith. It is not the only term we have had to redefine. Our reconsideration of religious terms has been particularly intense since 2003, when former UUA President William Singford started a debate about reclaiming the language of holiness. Think of sacred, think of soul, think of revelation. These are powerful concepts that were more or less captives in the world of conventional God talk. Our faith would be malnourished without them, but we have had to adopt and adapt them to our own understandings, as religious people have been doing for centuries. Now, having listened to this sermon so far, you might reasonably ask if I'm only complaining about the term worship service. Or would I be just as happy to go back to the old days of a program without the elements of a Protestant liturgy, assuming that were even possible? Well, thanks for asking, because that brings me to part two. It is a fact that back in 96, when I transferred to what was then the fellowship from Primeth Congregational Church, our cousin, in downtown Lawrence, I was delighted to discover how simple the format was here. A few announcements, program, joys and concerns, followed by coffee in the basement. Easy peasy. The program itself could be a talk, a performance, a panel discussion, or a seasonal celebration. So there was variety, to be sure, but I could sense even then that some people wanted something more. And I was curious to see what form that seeking, spiritual seeking was what we called it, what form that seeking would take. Its first manifestation was the spiritual service that I described earlier. It met at 9 o'clock on Sunday, and that was followed by the program at 10:30. Now we've just flipped them the other way in the last 3 or 4 years. Around the time we started the spiritual service, we found out about Midwestern Leadership School in Beloit, Wisconsin. The very first person we sent up to Beloit was the leader of our new spiritual service, Jeff Lewis. Jeff came back from Beloit with a glowing report, and so we sent our next chair-elect to the school, which happened to be me. Since that time, it has been our policy to send the chair-elect to leadership school, which is now moved to Decorah, Iowa. It is a great way to help the person get ready to be chair the following year. Today, we have among us almost 30 graduates of leadership school, including some of our youth. I drove up to Beloit in the summer of 2002. I have to confess, I was even a curmudgeon back then. I fully expected to spend a week singing Kumbaya, eating s'mores around a campfire, and maybe singing Spirit of Life. Fortunately, that did not happen. In fact, I had a revelation. When I got back to Lawrence, I put together a booklet describing the marvelous education I received at leadership school. And I raved about the remarkable friendships I had struck up with UUs from other states. These are people I continued to see again and email. It was way beyond my expectation. Then I wrote something that I had never expected to write. Quote, "The spiritual celebration is the future of our fellowship." Close quote. How could that have happened? At the school, each team of trainees was expected to cook up a worship service for one of the nights during the week. There were no rules other than to make sure each of the 5 or 6 team members assisted in the service. We were encouraged to be creative, to make use of any special abilities we had on the team. On my group, we had three musicians, so you can imagine what kind of a service that was. And amazingly, every team presented a rich and imaginative service that lasted about 45 minutes. I just wish I could have brought back each of those services to Lawrence for show and tell. But I realized eventually that there is a big difference between a service that you create for a small group of people that you know and trust, and a service that will be meaningful to a larger group of people that includes newer members and visitors. That is the difference between private worship and public worship. As much as I had liked the private worship experience, I knew I could not recreate that experience here. But still, I was a changed person after Beloit, and it has helped me decide what I do during the 11 o'clock gathering. I have come to understand worship as cherishing the possibility. Cherishing the possibility. Cherishing the possibility. What possibility is that? The possibility that life offers something more and different to us than we normally have time to compute during our busy weeks. The possibility that life also asks more of us, possibly in surprising or even scary ways. Life offers and life asks. We have seen this happen at UUCL. We know it can happen again. But it is only a possibility, not a calling from the sky that beams down on schedule every week. We can never know how or when that offering and asking will play out for each of us. It takes faith to cherish a possibility. Faith to cherish a possibility. Faith does not depend on knowledge or even probability. With even a small amount of such faith, we can open ourselves to the possibility that we will be touched, that we will be goaded, that we will be beckoned to in some way. Maybe it doesn't happen during a service. Maybe it happens during a task force meeting. Maybe it happens when we're making coffee or taking minutes or even texting, God help us. Some key unlocks a possibility within us that we were unaware of. A possibility that may lead us to a commitment to service, to greater beauty in our relationships, or just simply to a new delight in our own lives. It may mean leadership for some and followership for others. For some, it will include the possibility of transcendence, the discovery of a reality that we inhabit without realizing it. In centuries past, that realm was thought of as the kingdom of God or the kingdom of heaven. Today, in UU circles, it is usually referred to as the blessed community. I call these images of transcendence. They, too, are a part of the possibility I cherish. Transcendence may not be waiting for us in Tomorrowland when Jesus or the United Federation of Planets has finally cleaned up the mess our world is in. It may instead become real for us in moments that we experience today, if only briefly. At such moments, people have felt their lives to be suddenly, unexpectedly deepened. And we know this can happen. We know this can happen. In this reflection, I have traveled from the wonder box to the words we use to describe our 11 o'clock gathering. I have questioned the explanation offered in the New to UU class, thinking that it has more to do with the fact that we are Protestant flavored. I have described my new appreciation of the importance of worship service in light of my experience at Midwest Leadership School. And I have talked about my own idea of worship, of how it is an opportunity for us to cherish certain possibilities, to consider what life offers to us and what life asks of us. I don't know how it is with you, but those are the possibilities that I cherish. That is how I have come to understand the wonder box of worship.